We're on.
Yeah, I see the little record came on. Okay, well, welcome everybody. This is April 27th and the UFF bargaining team is meeting with the BOT bargaining team for impact bargaining. And I believe you sent us some information earlier today, and we've had a chance to look at that and respond somewhat, so I'm going to let Chuck start us off, or Dr. Riley.
All right, well, all right, Sherry, I'd be glad to do that. Giovanna, I want to thank you very much for sending us some feedback on what we had sent you. We've had a chance to powwow a little bit and talk about it. And we did want to discuss the things that you brought up while we're here. And I'm going to make sure that I'm looking at the document that you sent. Giovanna, do you think it's sufficient if we just look at the things that you've highlighted? Are the other things? Okay, so the other things are close enough that we're comfortable?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, all right, so we'll look at the highlighted things. On point number two.
Oh, could you share the screen, what you're looking at?
We'll see. I appreciate that you have so much confidence in me. Yes, I can. I think. How's that?
Yes, you did.
There it goes. Yay. Okay, good.
Wow. I'm impressed, Chuck.
Well, I think Brianna's had to help me with that, and I'm very grateful to her for doing that.
Thanks, Brianna.
On point number two, you talked about, you know, what are we going to do if there may be a concern, particularly multiple concerns about that students are raising, or maybe a chair or supervisors noticing during a visit to a class or something like that. And we started out some time ago talking about a good faith effort, and we admit that that's kind of not so clearly defined, and different people might have different interpretations of it. And what we had proposed last time, or what we had sent you, is something that we think is a little bit more clear. And what I want to suggest to you, not only is it clear, but it's rather out of the ordinary that it would happen. You've come back and proposed something that is truly extraordinary. When we start talking about half of the students in a class complaining about something, that basically never happens. I was a chair for 5 years. I've read a lot of evaluations. Every instructor, I don't care how many awards somebody wins, there's nobody that is universally loved by the students. There's something that somebody doesn't like, and it shows up. But you see one comment that somebody makes, and it doesn't really impact you. But as you're reviewing these things, what you notice sometimes is that there are patterns. And that's what we were trying to indicate here. First of all, we said that there has to be separate concerns. So this isn't two students saying, I think it takes too long to grade homework in this class. This is two separate types of concerns that are substantiated. So it isn't just that they're written down and maybe appear on the SPOIs, but they are looked into, that, you know, a supervisor follows up and, you know, is this legitimate? You know, what's going on here? So the idea of having multiple substantiated concerns is a pretty high bar for a complaint. I think it's an easy bar for a faculty member to deal with. It would be very rare that somebody would have more than one clear concern that comes up during a term. To go, we might be able to talk a little bit about that, but the idea of going to half of the class, I mean, that's just not going to happen. The College of Business has some classes with over 1,000 students in the section, and we'd have to have 500 or more students complain about the same thing. You know, that's not going to happen. So I don't know if anybody on your team has that experience that I can bring to our discussion from the chair's perspective. It's extremely rare to see repeated concerns expressed. That when you do see them, you may say, aha, we may be onto something. But just the mere presence of those repeated concerns don't mean that there's any reason to lower somebody's evaluation. In your comments, you mentioned a reprimand. We're not talking about reprimands here. We're looking at evaluations and, you know, is this a very serious concern? Is this something that we want to talk to the faculty member about?
No.
This just isn't going to happen often.
This was never in the context of discipline. This was in the context of evaluations. And, you know, we're not planning on running around slapping people with reprimands for things.
Okay. So this was in the, whenever we saw two, right, we thought of the 1,000 person class or even the smaller class. So if this is in the context of evaluation for spring, because the thing is, like, I'm coordinator and I'm also coordinator offices like the complaints office. And with the switch to online this past semester, I did have students too in several of my professors' classes. And normally I don't even have like a single complaint because they were too slow in organizing or their organization just was terrible when they went online suddenly. But it's, you know, it's not their fault. We were supposed to,
right.
You know, they expected face to face. So I guess that was the concern. Like if, two seemed to, like, you know, I got two already, like very quickly from students who started to, and then very substantiated too. They said, this is not there. The deadlines are not there. The supervisor went there and talked to the professor and the professor explained and then everything was okay. And then I went back to the students and told them this is what we did. And it seems like things have been corrected. So that's another
thing. And in a case like that, I would say there shouldn't be any change to an evaluation.
Okay.
I mean, the problem's been handled. If there are concerns, that people will express them so we can try to correct things. Mm-hmm. It isn't that we're waiting to pounce on somebody. We got two complaints, you know, unsatisfactory for teaching. No, that's not what this is about. But
So that's one of the reasons why we put. So you know, this is part of the negotiation. So two in this, you know, separate subject based on student complaints. And so rather than just or have and, because, you know, in order to have a follow-up. So if there is some substantiated concern that the supervisor would be able to observe, visit, or at least talk to the professor about what's going on, what happened in this situation. But I understand what you're saying. So having two complaints, yeah, because I saw that more often this semester. I normally don't get, you know, as coordinator, I'll get like one student complain about a professor, maybe two is rare. So I know what you mean by that. But this semester I got two or three per several of the classes. And that, I think it just, you know, because of the situation.
Right. And that's understandable, but it sounds like you were able to resolve those.
Yes. Oh, okay. So I see what you mean. So the way this language read, we understood it as like it would be unresolved. So with the exception of employees, okay. used. Is there anywhere to put in there like that's unresolved?
Well, wait a minute. Let me look at the language here. Oh, I was trying to pull it up.
Do you separate substantial concerns and supervisor?
Okay. With the exception for employees who have two separate. And super observations visits. Okay, let me think here a second with the exception. And or supervisor, which have not resolved the resolve the problem or something like that, or resolve the issue. Yeah. I'm having a hard time. There's so many scratch outs and I'm doing this on the fly. It's hard to, you know, trying to find what the actual language is. Okay.
So if we go back to the intentional meaning, so Chuck's original language. Yeah. Okay. And it remains unresolved because we understand that point where, you know, some professor, like what Chuck is saying, the professor who disappears and, you know, it causes burden to the other faculty members.
And we actually have to have two of those this semester. So, I think we resolved one, but I mean, you know, sometimes you can't, but that's what our intent is.
Okay.
Well, let me read a new version of the last sentence that I had in there, if I may. It says, except for employees about whom there are at least two separate and substantiated concerns based on student complaints and or supervisor observation / visitation that cannot be resolved. Then we go to the bullet points.
Okay, that cannot be resolved. Okay. There's something we'll discuss in caucus, but...
Probably say we're not resolved because
I would say we're not. Yeah.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Okay. All right. I think your next thing is on point number 5. I guess it's up to me to keep sharing this screen. Okay, so you had added quite a bit here. Okay. There are a lot of different commitments that are made at a variety of different levels of the institution. And whoever makes those, I believe, has every intention of allowing those funds to be used. Some of those decisions are made at the department level, where a chair has said, I'm going to make, let's say $1,000 available to a faculty member for professional travel. There may be a dean that make some funds available for seed money for a multidisciplinary research project or whatever the case may be. And there may be some things that are at the university level. We don't know how many of those arrangements have been made. And I don't even know how we could gather all that information and be able to say anything about it. I just don't know how to do this. You know, we say that as much as it's possible, we want people to be able to use these discretionary funds. That is absolutely true. But I don't think we can say across the university, regardless of whether it's a provost, a dean, or a chair director making a commitment to a faculty member, I don't know that we can guarantee that that's going to happen. I don't think we can prorate them. Because different colleges may be impacted differently because enrollments are going to be impacted in a different fashion. I mean, I just don't know how to do this. Part of it is I don't know what all the commitments are. Those aren't recorded any place. If a chair makes a commitment to a faculty member, they may be the only two people on the planet that know anything about it. But certainly those commitments were made initially with the intention that they would be fulfilled. But none of us knows what the budgets are going to look like in the coming year. And if we get too aggressive with these previous commitments, and I want to use the word commitments. I mean, that's what they were intended to be, was commitments. But now we may be at a point where honoring those commitments in a very timely way could affect how many colleagues we have. If there are a lot of $1,000 travel commitments that have been made in a particular college, and we said, oh, we got to make sure that those things are honored, that may be the difference between hiring a new faculty member and not hiring a new faculty member. There are consequences to these things. So, I mean, I don't know how to do better than to say, subject to whatever budget conditions we have, we're going to do the best we can. We're going to try to make this good. And there may be some colleges that are able to fulfill all of theirs, and some that are going to have to make some tough choices. And I don't know that we can say anything that's a blanket statement across the university, other than to say we're going to try to do the best we can under local budget conditions.
Could we say that, what you just said? So go with the same language we had for sabbatical, where we agreed that good faith effort to honor all. And what you just said too, that we're going to hope to, you know, but just getting it in writing that we're going to do our best. But, you know, given budget conditions, we'll do our best.
All right, we'll certainly look at that.
Okay.
But I think you understand. I mean, none of us knows exactly what we're going to be facing for the coming academic year. But it's certainly the case that people had hoped. That's why those commitments were made. People wanted to see folks succeed, wanted to see them travel, wanted to see them do research, whatever the case might be, wanted them to get a new computer, if that's what it was all about. That was certainly the intention. So we will take a look at that, and I actually appreciate the suggestion of looking at something like good faith effort, which I think is about the best that we can do. I'm going to ask my wonderful colleague Sarah to help me on point number 6. She is much more expert than me on this one.
Hey, everyone. So on point 6 regarding the work from home, we specifically, when we were thinking about this at least, and looking at the language, we had proposed the language healthcare providers, kind of thinking about how that term was defined under the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, because that was kind of my lens for a lot of this and what I was thinking about as I was looking over this. And it was a lot to put in this, which is why we didn't put in all this detail, but under that law, healthcare provider, it's defined twice for different purposes. Once it's defined pretty narrowly as to who's qualified to give a medical opinion as to someone's ability to return to work. In other places as to when it's defining healthcare provider as who's like an essential employee, it's defined very broadly. And the idea there being that, you know, this is a time of crisis. We need to be able to respond as quickly and effectively as possible. And, you know, it's an ever-evolving situation. The types of people that we thought were maybe absolutely necessary day one, that might have expanded now that new symptoms are constantly being added, new effects are constantly being felt. It's just evolving a lot. So the idea there was just that I don't feel qualified, and I don't think anyone on our side is qualified to make a determination as to who is a clinically necessary healthcare provider. So we were just going to leave it as healthcare provider with understanding that it was defined rather broadly to be anyone necessary to basically provide a response to the coronavirus pandemic. And their supervisors in that field being qualified to make the determination as to whether that person should be present to perform their duties or can do so from home. There may be some healthcare providers that can do certain things from home, maybe part of their jobs, not all of their jobs. It just gets too in the weeds for us to make that determination, and I just don't feel like we're the right people to do it. So that's kind of why we don't really feel comfortable with that clinically necessary language. But I think everything else in there was fine with us.
Okay. All right. Yeah, we'll discuss that one in caucus as well.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah.
On point nine, you've made a suggestion that the deans would make a good faith effort to honor all petitions about deferring sabbaticals.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd like to suggest a slight change and a small addition to this. Let's imagine if it said something like, deans shall make a good faith effort to honor all petitions, period. If he/she decides not to honor a petition, the dean shall consult with the affected employee. This mirrors the sabbatical language in Article 22.
Okay.
The good faith effort doesn't, but the idea of somebody's turned down, the dean will consult with them.
Okay. All right.
It's just keeping it consistent with the CBA.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And then
oh, and I guess I had a question. So up above, so I saw that there's now a form for cleaning spaces. Is that something like for cleaning and sanitation? Is that like a special fund? Are we getting anything through the federal government or the state government for cleaning?
I don't think we know the complete answer to that right now. As that form stands right now, the answer is no.
Okay.
The way that form reads, the unit that's requesting it has to provide a university account number to pay for it. And I apologize, I didn't stop at this when I was scrolling through this because there was no highlighted yellow. I was just looking for the yellow. But I had an opportunity last week to communicate with Renee Michelle, who's the Director of Environmental Health and Safety, and Dwayne Seaman, who heads up facilities. And there were some places where there was some cleaning done. There was a student who was identified pretty close to the time that we moved to off campus. And there was some cleaning that was done in a dorm and a few classrooms. And there may be a few other places that were cleaned as well. I don't know if that's the same student that my dear colleague Nina mentioned before we started this official meeting or not. It may be that it's a different student, but what we're looking at is right now, it's pretty much been a month, more than a month, since people have been on campus. Mm-hmm. And anything that might have been living on a surface when we were asked to begin working at home is no longer living on that surface, whether it was that surface was cleaned or not.
Okay.
So the conversations that I had, or the email communications I had with Renee Michelle and Dwayne Seaman, sort of we all three concluded that the safest we're ever going to have this campus is when we all come back, even if we don't do anything, because the campus is in really good shape right now, not because necessarily much has been cleaned, although there has been some cleaning, but just because anything that was potentially harmful is no longer living.
Okay.
But will we get... Go ahead, Sherry.
I was going to say, we're the biggest threat, not the surfaces.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm sure they will clean before people come back. We're not saying, but... environmental health and safety will be the ones that will determine, based on OSHA guidelines and other things, what is actually necessary to make sure that everybody is as safe as we can make it.
Okay, because that's what I was wondering too, if it was going to be like OSHA guidelines, CDC guidelines, like, well, I guess that just maybe, I guess the language there is to announce it, like what kind, because I know there's some professors who I think they're going to take their Lysol and come to campus and clean their own office.
Just and that's a great, that's
a good point. Psychological, you know, feeling safer that way.
And I may do the very same thing.
Yeah.
If I can find any Lysol at Publix, I'll be happy to do that.
That's what I was going to say, if we can put our hands on Lysol.
Yeah. So I felt quite a bit better after communicating with Renee and Dwayne last week that, you know, they believe that the campus is in pretty good shape. There was also a task force at the university that is managing this situation, not just the cleaning situation, but the entire pandemic for the university. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as far as I know, there are no plans for extraordinary cleaning.
Okay.
And it's believed that it's not necessary. And what you have to keep in mind, as I keep reminding myself, the people that are making that decision are also coming back to work in the same environment that will be coming back to work, and they think it's fine, that they're willing to work there.
Okay. All right. So you can scroll down. Let me see what else we have.
Oh, the last point here. I guess you had a question about the Office of Institutional Equity.
Yes.
The Office of Institutional Equity is the place on campus that helps employees determine what reasonable accommodations they might be eligible for so that they can continue to do their job.
So would this be directly related to COVID?
No, that's just there all the time. No, it is not anything that's particular to COVID.
Because I guess we were a little confused. Like, what does it do, like mental health care, physical health care?
What they would do is get information from a healthcare provider that an employee would provide and determine what reasonable accommodations might be possible so that this person can continue to succeed in their job.
Okay. So is this sort of believable if they're disabled? Well, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sarah.
I would say it is possible that someone could have a disability, like the intersection of their disability and COVID-19 requires a specific accommodation. That would have to be supported by a doctor's note. Not every disability automatically affected by the pandemic. So there are possible intersections. So that's like, we would like them, I would like them to be involved if there's any requests, like for example, if it's extended work from home for a certain reason, mm-hmm. That could be something that could be addressed as a possible accommodation. If they have a disability that prevents them from coming back to campus, and it would, you know, it's possible that they could have, you know, a suppressed immune system such that they shouldn't be back on campus. And if their doctor recommends that they work from home and they can work from home, that's an accommodation that OIE could put in place. There's certain, just in general, the EEOC has issued guidance that fear of coming back during a pandemic is not a disability that can be accommodated, even if you have what you believe to be certain comorbidities, like I myself have hypertension. I technically am more, I guess, at danger than the average person from, or I guess anyone else with no comorbidities for COVID-19. But that alone, like there's nothing about my condition that prevents me from going back into work, me specifically, but there might be someone who has a more specific condition or something that would support a COVID-19 related accommodation. And they're gonna know the ins and outs of all of that. So rather than someone's supervisor trying to make that choice, supervisors should be routing to them anyway. So if they do end up with a referral to OIE, they'll know why.
Okay. All right, so that makes sense. Yeah, we were just wondering because we were thinking OIE does, we were limited in thinking of like examples of why you'd need OIE, but that makes sense. Okay.
They kind of have a dual role in that regard. They do all of the workplace accommodations under the ADA, as well as addressing complaints of discrimination.
Okay.
Opportunity.
Yeah, and that's why we put COVID, the you know, sick leave pool, like that would seem more related. But okay, it makes sense now. Thank you.
Where you have put the COVID-19 and regular sick leave pools in there, for this particular section of the MOU, we're talking about kind of when this is over.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the COVID-19 sick pool isn't going to last very long. I don't remember the date when it goes away, but the regular sick leave pools are always there. That's one of the, mm-hmm. the benefits that people have. But I was classifying OIE more as a resource, mm-hmm. something that's available on campus. The EAP for some of these folks that may be having some challenges just coping with COVID and so on, I think the EAP is going to be very important, and employees have sick leave in some cases. Certainly right now there's some additional sick leave that's available that's not going to be available forever.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then
that's the answer to how long the Knights Care Leave Share is, the what I guess is being referred to as the COVID-19 sick leave pool. Mm-hmm. The HR branding is Knights Care Leave Share. So that will last as long as the federal disaster declaration lasts. So we don't yet know how long it will last, but under IRS guidelines, we're allowed to have that pool open as long as it's considered a federal disaster.
Okay.
So could be next week, could be the end of the year. We don't know. So we're trying, that's why we're really pushing for like a lot of donations and people to use it, because we just don't know how long we'll be able to offer it.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Then I want to look at the last sentence here. Right now, there's a monthly email that all employees get about the employee assistance program. So if we said, well, we want to do something together, it's redundant. It's already done. And as most of the people involved in this meeting will know, crafting a joint statement is like passing a bill in Congress. It's got to be checked at all these different levels, and everybody's got to be satisfied with it. That's a major, major effort. So that, I think, is asking a lot. When people are struggling right now with all the things that they have to do to say, we're going to do another thing that's going to be very, very time consuming to complete. And one of the things that not everybody may be aware of, there's actually a resolution from the Faculty Senate that has been sent to the provost, where the Faculty Senate is trying to limit the number of emails that faculty get. I don't know what the provost is going to decide, but one of the ones that was mentioned, for example, was the weekly health tips from the College of Medicine. Some people want to opt out of those. So,
by the way, I really like those.
Yeah. Can people be told how to use a filter?
Yeah.
Just be provided like a 2-minute self-instruction on how that particular email that will never have to show up in their inbox again if they don't want it to.
May I update, because I was participant in this discussion for Faculty Senate, so I know exactly what was the discussion and what is the status of this resolution.
Mm. Has the provost ruled on it yet, Nina?
No, I don't know about, but is it possible for me just to talk, Ivana?
Sure.
So I have, it was only regarding this health tip, and actually it would be a choice. You can opt out or you can stay with this. But also it was another concern that some faculty wanted to have if somebody would die, and then you don't know about this, your colleague, like from different college. But then it was many discussions if we really want to have this announcement. And that was only two, nothing else.
Yeah. And I know when there was some discussion, and I may not get this completely correct, and I apologize in advance for that, but this idea of allowing people to opt out, I can't opt out of, I don't want to get a message from Sherry, but I want to get a message from Scott, and Giovanna's okay too, and Nina's okay, but you know, Sarah, no, I don't want any messages from her. I can't, right now, with the software the university has, I believe you can't be that selective. You're in or you're out. So you're an employee and you get these messages or you're not. And that may change at some point, but it's not an easy question.
Scott, actually,
but we're getting a little bit sidetracked too.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. To bring it right back to this, so let me offer this. Can we, and I'm asking from your end, Chuck, because I really, you know, if your end could do this work, could we do better in this number 16 of just listing here? I mean, are these the resources? Is that it? Is it EAP and OIE? Or what does it look like? You know, what is it then too numerous to kind of like think about what it looks like here? I mean, but I don't know, you know, like I'm kind of just kind of curious about what that significant, you know, comprehensive, tight list of resources like EAP and OIE might look like. And so rather than worry about committing to any kind of an email or joint statement or anything like that, could we maybe just flesh that part out then of what's already here and discard the idea of, you know, any kind of required. I still love the rest of it where we're committed to announce it on our own or anything, but we could certainly get, you know, get rid of our last sentence as we have it. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I think that's an interesting question that, you know, I think we can try to explore a little bit when we go into caucus if we do that. I don't know whether there is such a single place where we could, you know, be wonderful. There is a website, you know, go here. Everything's listed here. My guess is it's a little more scattered than that, but let's see what we can find out.
Okay.
Because maybe we just put it, if there is such a website or two websites, maybe putting the URLs for those websites here solves that problem.
There's that. But then I might, you know, and but then, yeah, maybe also if we flesh it out a little bit, I don't know, just kind of think about what it could look like, right? So maybe it doesn't have to be a lot of resources, but maybe with each one, we're able to agree on like a top, like detail about it that someone might not know. So someone might read this and say, employee assistance program, okay, you know, I don't know what that is or that it pertains to me or what I would do there. You know, so I don't know, I'm just kind of brainstorming it. I had thought this through, so you know, well, thank you for just
but adding a link or so, that would, we could remove that line, that seems fair. So I think we're gonna go to caucus, but I wanted to recap before we go to caucus, and is it Chuck, do you want me to share the screens just so I can highlight again what we're talking about?
That's okay with me. Do I have to hit stop share here?
Yeah, so you stop share so that I can share. And also Sarah added a website. It's ucf.edu/coronavirus. So there is a website that we could add to this.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a website. That's the general one. And then if you go to that page, there's a link for employees. And that links to the remote work guidelines and HR's FAQ. This might be a place where additional resources could be included on this page. That could be the one-stop shop for people, because this is pretty HR focused. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't currently list OIE or the EAP, but that would probably not be that hard. That's something marketing probably could do pretty quickly, is on the for all employees page, adding resources for coping or addressing or responding, whatever we want to call it, with the virus and its continued impacts. We'd have to make sure that this page stayed up and active as long as we're, you know, worried about the impact still. But I imagine the page is not going away anytime soon, unfortunately. We would all love circumstances to go away so the page could go away.
Yes. Okay. All right. So just to recap, so if we have like a 15-minute, I guess our request is for a 15-minute caucus. And so just to recap on lines 25 to 28, if we use Chuck's original language with the addition suggested by Sherry saying that, you know, with cases that are not resolved or they cannot be resolved, in cases, you know, and that would make it very clear it's usually someone who's disappeared and is not even communicating with their chair regarding this issue. Going down a little bit further, here I think we talked about a little bit of language. I think Scott suggested we put something like just best effort, and also Chuck was talking about we're going to do our best, but putting that more in like legalese style language to be able to, and I think we could agree with that one as well. Number six, right below, so I did my research also, like Sarah was saying, like healthcare providers is, yeah, there's the two meanings. One is super broad, so I thought clinically necessary might be a good thing to add there, but I understand the reasoning and the logic and rationale behind that, and I think we'll discuss it in caucus, but I think we'll be okay with just having except for healthcare providers. And then what else?
Which was basically, yes, you can, but it's probably stupid.
I'm sorry, what did you say, Sherry? Wait, hello? Wait, what happened? Sherry, I can't hear her.
hang on a second. No, sorry, I need to mute myself. Hang on.
I think Sherry had to take a phone call.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay. Oops. Okay, hello? Hello? Wait, somebody say something, because my...
I'm here. I'm
listening. Okay. Yeah, my things went like a little goofy here, so... Okay. All right, the other one, for recap, we were looking at Dean shall make a good faith effort on all petitions. Oh, we would use the sabbatical language in order to mirror that language. Okay, so I think we'll discuss that in caucus as well, but I think we're not against that such suggestion, since it would be language that we already exist in our CBA. You answered our question regarding sanitation. Let me see, and then going below this, I think for the final thing, I think we're fine with having OIE now that you've explained. We didn't realize that they also did workplace accommodations, so that makes sense now to have that there. And the other section was what Scott suggested, and also Chuck, which was to just have a link so that people know where to go for resources. There we go. So those are the final, you know, so instead of having that line 2021, perhaps having a link where people can find what all these resources are and also have that explained to them. So is everyone good? And we can go to, so we can go to caucus and then we'll come back in 15 minutes, 10, 15 minutes.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Okay. All right, good. All right. My team, you have the link for the caucus room, and I'll see you guys soon. And Charlie, I guess Scott has Charlie and Sherry's text number, so he'll text you guys when we're ready. Or actually, no, you'll see us when we come back, if you stay here. Okay. All right. Thank you. See you soon.
Hey, Brannis, I noticed Eloy isn't here. Did he get invited?
I believe so. Let me look who all's invited.
Still have one person hanging around.
I know. Latarsha, if you'll sign off to go to your caucus.
What did you all decide?
I think you had more to decide than we did.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. So, okay, let me.
That's what we decided. We needed to hear from you.
Okay. All right, so share screen. So we talked with our team. Let's share. All right, so you should be able to see that. So let me just bring it back up again. All right, so in this one's lines 24 to 27, so, adding the phrase, I guess, unresolved. So using your language, Chuck, with the exception of employees about whom there are at least two separate and substantive and somewhere put based on student complaints, but put the word or the phrasing unresolved.
Okay.
Because as I said, I was telling my team, you know, I normally don't get two like complaints from any one professor. That is a little unusual, but this semester, even though the professors were meant to be very kind to the students weren't necessarily very kind to the professors. Yeah, so we want to just make sure that, you know, it's put somewhere in there unresolved, the word unresolved. Because, you know, we understand that some professors may have taken advantage of the situation and disappeared.
I think when we were discussing this early in our session, one of the things that had been suggested is just to append the words that were not resolved at the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that were not resolved. So as I said, like in the case specific in my department, I contacted the professor right away. He immediately wrote me back and said, you know, and then the chair got involved and we fixed the issue.
Excellent.
Which is all we want.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's the outcome we hope that we get every time.
Yes, that would be nice. There was that one. For this one, if you guys agree with, I guess, with Chuck, what you were saying, that you would do your best or good faith effort using that kind of language in here, then we would agree to this section. Line 69 through 75 and point.
Okay.
Sold.
I think, yeah, the intention that we seem to be agreeing on is to just try and capture that the default position is to, you know, everybody wants to honor, like, you know, anything that was already expected or to be awarded and everything. So, you know, the language that reflects that, I think, works.
Mm-hmm. The other one highlighted on line 77, doing, as Sarah has pointed out, it is healthcare provider right now is very broad. Probably the one suggestion that Scott had was starting with in-unit faculty and professionals, and putting except Scott, say exactly what you said earlier, putting the except for at the end of that sentence, or with the exception.
I think it is clearer. We're not trying to take anything away from the flexibility needed here and what we're trying to do. I think it's better and clearer because I had a number of faculty point out to me actually the way it's written was almost kind of like requiring some people to get out of their homes that we don't want necessarily out of their homes. So to start with, it's so small, I'm trying to see.
In-unit faculty and professional employees.
Yeah, to start with in-unit faculty and professional employees, except for healthcare employees for whom it is deemed necessary to work remotely. Something to that effect.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Instead of that clause at the beginning, let's put that clause at the end, and you know, kind of give that flexibility to make the determination there. But we're also trying to, you know, again, take the position that, hey, I was talking about it with a whole bunch of people who were on a call this morning. You know, we have an opportunity here at the university, and that's why we're meeting now. We are leadership too. You know, we're the leaders and leaders need to make some decisions. And we don't need to talk about the decisions that are being made outside of this meeting or anything. But, you know, I think for as long as we can to default to the position that we are trying to protect everybody and be safe and really know what's going on and be informed and, you know, respect CDC and you know, all sorts of health advice, you know, that's, you know, to have that kind of like be stated, we want that captured and we want the flexibility of the decision making needs to be done of when people need to respond to their work duties.
And it's like the clause also, it read a little bit fast. So I think some of our members were thinking that it just read too quickly. They were like, except for in-unit faculty, shall not be. So they were reading it. So anyways, it would improve the clause and the meaning. So we're not taking away the meaning. The meaning is still there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just better written. Okay, so let me see. All right, so now, okay, scrolling down.
And if I could just sit on that point for one more moment, because we're not seeing it in writing, you know, the phrase that I used was, you know, something along the lines of, you know, for whom it is deemed necessary, right? We want to respect that decisions are going to need to be made. And we want, you know, to know that people are being thoughtful as possible about those decisions. So thank you.
Okay. Lines 119 to 21 will mirror the sabbatical language that we have in our current CBA. So we agree to that. That one was point number 9.
Okay.
And then at the very end, if my understanding of our meeting was that, oh, we're okay here, line 216, putting Office of Institutional Equity. It was more a question then, because I did not know that they also dealt with workplace accommodations. And then the final, if we could add Sarah's link. I know it's not Sarah's link, but we could add the link. We went to the link. Everything was working. We were happy with it. Oh, and
the
Scott,
one that I just the one that I just sent, Sarah. Yeah, that, you know, that I think just kind of drilled it down. So the faculty toolkit that's on that page, I think, is a fantastic link to have in this document. So that it looked really good. It was like those kinds of things that we're kind of talking about. It's you know, the best one-stop shop I think there is. That, I mean, it looks good. So if we had, yep, that link offered, that would be great.
Cool.
Good.
Okay.
Well, okay, Chuck, if I'm following along, it sounds like we pretty much reached agreement. We may have to tinker with some language just a little bit in one or two of these places to get the final document. And since we're out of time, what if we, am I reading that right? Am I seeing it right, Chuck, since you've been
I think taking, you are. I think you
okay.
are.
Okay. What if we take this back and tinker with the language, just make sure that we've got it all clean and got it where we need it, and we'll send you a copy of the track change document and then a clean document so we can both look at it. And maybe have a quick meeting next Monday just to make sure that we're in agreement, and then we'll put this thing to bed. How about that?
That would be wonderful.
and okay.
So there's no way to like perhaps sign it this week, like on Thursday morning?
Well, we might. Let us look at it and see if we can get the language. I'm going to defer to Charlie on this, because I don't understand. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how we're going to do the signing process. I know we can do it. We're going to do electronic signatures, or what are we doing with that?
First step, let's get a document that everyone agrees on. Then if we make it into a PDF, we can add the signature place that you would normally use. And I think we can exchange it that way. Maybe with an email sort of saying what we're doing. I that seems like the best guess that I would have.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then how about we'll take responsibility for making the changes and trying to get a clean document back and making sure that we're all on the same page in a day or two, and maybe we can get this thing put to bed this week.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be wonderful. All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good job.
Thanks, everybody, for being cooperative and flexible, and we really appreciate it. And thanks from my part, especially to Dr. Riley, for spearheading this and doing such a great job on our team. We appreciate that.
Great team effort.
Great team effort from and on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everyone. And my team, I'll have a debrief back into the bargaining room if you guys want to go there. Okay. All right. Bye, everybody. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.